Vermont Viewpoint is a public affairs program produced and funded by WDEV and the Radio Vermont Group. We welcome listener feedback. Email your comments to vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com.
Good morning. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. I'm Rick Sengary. This hour, we're going to learn about some special Vermont beers and some Vermont specialty foods. Then next hour, singer Taryn Noel will join us to talk about her new musical, and we'll hear about Vermont's weatherization assistance program. But I promised beer, didn't I? So let's dip into the suds. It's so nice driving around this state to find the many beautiful areas to explore. The Champlain Islands is one of those amazing places. And when you traverse this area, oh, what a joy to find a great little Vermont brewery. In South Hero, it's the perfectly named Two Heroes Brewing. Joining me now are the two of the principals behind Two Heroes. We've got Matt Bartles. Matt, welcome to Vermont Viewpoint.
Thank you.
And Darren Orr. Darren, thank you for being here as well.
Hey, thanks for the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Listeners, to ask Darren and Matt about Two Heroes, or if you've already enjoyed their beers, give us a call, 244-1777, 877-291-8255. You can also email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. Matt, when did the two of you start brewing beer together?
Oh, gosh, it was probably the better part of 10 years ago. Darren came and worked for me. When we were making pizzas at the old Wally's place and found out he was a home brewer, so I latched onto him pretty quickly.
And was it intended to grow into a brewery or just a hobby there on the side of the pizza shop?
I think that any home brewer always has a dream of opening a brewery. But there's, you know, lots of steps that you got to go through to get there. And I think, you know, we brewed together for some time and just kind of watched the market. And finally saw an opportunity.
Darren, when did you realize that you were actually good at this and it was time to open up a nano brewery?
I think it's been a dream for a long time, but it's just hard to get there when you're in your basement at home doing a few gallons at a time. You don't realize all the business-type aspects and permitting and business structure type things that's a lot different than having fun at home.
Well, and what was the conversation like? Where was that tipping point that launched Two Heroes Brewing, Darren?
I think it was we were actually home brewing in the back of the bagel shop years ago. And ironically, years later, we went and leased that same building that the bagel shop used to be in, that Wally's place used to be in. So we're ironically brewing in literally the same room that we were homebrewing in years and years ago. So when we were doing this in the same building years ago, we figured that the islands and South Hero really needed another place for people to go and hang out and eat and get good food and good drinks. And that was it, and we just realized we wanted to do kind of a brew pub and just create a community space for people up here.
Had you known, you never had to leave the building. You could have just stayed right there, start brewing, and Two Heroes would have been born a little bit earlier.
Right,
Matt. The name is genius. I'm sure there's some beer drinkers in the islands who think you are the two heroes. But explain the name and who came up with it.
Yeah, that's a common misconception is that we're two heroes. I think when we first started, we were thinking it might resemble some historical stuff related to Ira Allen and Ethan Allen, two brothers who were sort of afforded some land in the Revolutionary War, but we did some research and decided that we really didn't want to go down that, could say, rabbit hole, and that we would just sort of signify the North and South Hero in the Grand Isle County by saying two heroes and sort of encompass the whole county, which we were able to do some beers named after some geographical, you know, some geography around here, which is really fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, Darren, what would you say typifies the beers that you brew at Two Heroes?
I'd say we do a really good variety of different styles. So we do everything from modern hazy style IPAs to traditional German and Belgian and even French beers. So a good mix of modern American, and traditional European stuff. So kind of just across the board, try to have something for really everybody.
And Matt, as you mentioned, the tasting room is where Matt's Bagels once was. So tell people where that is and what you've got in there right now.
Well, it's at the corner of Ferry Road and Route 2 in South Yarrow. So right as you're going to the ferry, perhaps, on the way to New York. As far as what we have in here, we have a very small pilot system that we brew lots of small batches into somewhat larger fermenters and holding tanks that we sort of already had acquired for the brew pub. And we have a very small little tasting room inside, so you can come in and hang out, see all the equipment, and taste the brews. And then for nicer days, we have a little outdoor beer garden space that we used quite heavily in the summer. But as the winter comes along, it might not be as fun. But, you know, you could wear your snowsuit and have a couple beers outside.
We're hardy here in Vermont. I'm not sure we even need the snowsuit. You, talk about those picnic tables that you've created. Those are wonderful.
Those were all the scrap wood that we had left over from flour deliveries and grain deliveries and anything we could find just to make some seats, affordable seats, I should say.
Yeah, and Darren, you know, Matt mentioned, you know, on the way to the ferry across the New York State, but I'm going to bet that a lot of people coming into Vermont across that ferry can't wait to get some great Vermont beer, and you're the first stop. You're like the first brewery they will encounter, right?
Yep. We do catch a lot of people going to and from New York, and it's great for them because it's either on the way over or on the way home. And usually we're a lot of customers that come in say it's their first time in, which is awesome because it's a new experience for a lot of people that walk through the door, which is fun to, you know, deal with those people and just talk to people from all walks of life.
I found it a perfect stop off for Saturdays when I'd go to the farmer's market, the Iowans farmer's market. You know, load up on vegetables and then pull over and load up on on some beer. So, great Vermont products in my car heading back to the mainland. All right. So, Darren, what are the future plans that you have for the brewery?
So we actually just started, just a few weeks ago, we started construction on a new building down the road, on Route 2. It's actually directly to the right of the South Hero Library, the Worthen Library. And so that's going to be, it's about 4,400 square feet of inside space, 50 seat, brew pub, and we'll have a full kitchen with kind of a local focus on the food menu. And we'll get to make even more styles, and the brewing system will get bigger. And so we'll have a better variety of beer at that point. But we're just in the beginning stages of construction on that. So we're a ways out there, but we're all excited for it.
Matt, the design I saw looked like a monitor barn. Is that intentional? Is that what you're going for with the is it a public house you're calling it?
Yeah. We kind of wanted to have something that would fit into the Vermont scene, you know, while not being a real old style monitor barn, be something more efficient, but, exactly fit in, to the scene. So when you come into South here on sort of the other end over the causeway, you'll come down the hill and the brewery will be right there on your right before the library and fire station. So, it allows us to have some vertical growth space for the future, provide sort of a historic representation of farms in Vermont, which is neat.
How many of the current tap rooms that you do have can fit in the new one that you're building right now?
That's 1,200 square feet, so about four.
So it's going to be a great upgrade. Do you have an idea, Matt, when or Darren, when that will be open?
We're hoping for about a year from now. We're hoping for next fall.
All right. We'll cross our fingers and can't wait for that. All right, Matt, let's start trying some beers. So let me tell you, the first time I had one of your beers, I'm invited over by friends in South Hero, perfect spring day, sitting outside, and I was handed a Turtle Bay IPA. Never heard of it, but it made an immediate impact. Really crisp, delicious IPA. So tell us a little bit about Turtle Bay.
The actual location or the beer?
You can do both, actually.
Well, Turtle Bay, I think once was called Knee Deep Bay. It's on sort of the southern part on Greater Mallet Bay on South Hero. And there was apparently a lot of painted turtles that lived there. And I think it was my father-in-law at some point that was saying, you know, when he knew that I was going to be opening up a brewery, thought it would be so funny to have a Turtle Bay IPA. And so the name was born. And I have to leave it to Darren to tell you exactly how the flavors came together, because it was his creation as far as the beer goes.
Great. Darren?
Yeah, so that one is kind of a traditional New England-style IPA, a little bit hazy. It's ironic because most New England-style IPAs are made with hops from the Pacific Northwest, so Northern California and Oregon. So a lot of citrusy hop flavors in there, and just a little bit of haze, 6.7%, so it's not, won't put you over, it's not an 8%er, but it's just enough to balance it out with the hop and malt.
And brewers tend to hate this question, but is this the signature beer of Two Heroes?
No, I wouldn't say so. It is our most popular beer because of the nature of the style. A lot of people just love IPAs and just love those hop flavors. I would want to say our signature, we don't really have one single signature beer, but we have a few styles that do stay on all the time, and Turtle Bay is one of them. So we also have a lager, a pale ale, and a stout that are on the menu all the time. So we kind of have like four flagship beers, really, that we try to keep available.
Well, Darren, grab another one for us that you're particularly proud of and tell us about it.
I would have to say the lager, because you don't see a lot of them around. Obviously, there's way more IPAs around nowadays. So it's just really crisp and clean, great on a summer day or even in the winter. Just a simple beer, kind of like the way that beer used to be.
Mm-hmm. No, it's an excellent point. It's, I'm going to say what I grew up on, but, you know, what I knew on the local beers, you know, where I grew up were those, you know, crisp, clean, nice lagers with a lot of great flavor. Yours is called Rebel's Reward Lager, correct?
Yep. Yeah, and that's another reference to the islands up here, kind of the Green Mountain Boys, and Ethan and Ira Allen were kind of rebels at the time, so it's just a homage to them and kind of how they founded this, kind of discovered this area and just what they did with the Green Mountain Boys.
Now, Matt, Vermont beer drinkers, and I think the drinkers from away who come into Vermont looking for our beers, we can be a bit snobby, to put it mildly. So what kind of feedback have you been getting from the people stopping in at your tasting room?
I think to Darren's point, we do sell a lot of IPA. So I feel like the main draw to Vermont, you know, because of Petty Topper and Hill Farmstead and some of these other sort of very notable breweries, has been to come to Vermont and check out all the IPAs that the Vermont has to offer. But I think what we're trying to do is convince people that there's other beer. Historically, there's lots of other beer that people should be trying. And I think that when we have people come in and look for an IPA and you say, oh, but we have this, but we also have all these other assortments and these styles, you catch a lot of people being very surprised when they taste something. They're like, oh, that's really good.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, our main goal is to build a brew pub, and we want to have food that goes with beer and beer that goes with food. So, you know, we can't hit the ground running with 10 different IPAs because we want to be able to sort of give everybody an option to have a low alcohol beer or a dark beer with their dinner or with their lunch, per se. So we want to keep the styles a large variety, I should say.
How many taps do you have in the tasting room where you are now, and how many will you have at the new brew pub?
Right now, we actually have 8 because we brought in a couple small kegerators to handle some extra kegs that we had. But at the pub, we'll probably have more than 8, a few of which will be dedicated to non-alcoholic stuff, locally made sodas and seltzers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is we'll have at least 12 over there.
That's an exciting prospect. Well, Darren, another of my faves is the Hillsale Pale Ale. Tell us about that one.
So that's a classic American pale ale. I use a combination of West Coast hops and Vermont-grown hops, which is kind of fun to use local ingredients, you know, everywhere we can. But a malt-focused pale ale, but with just enough citrusy hop character in there to kind of give you that spicy note in your mouth.
Who's providing your hops from Vermont?
Champlain Valley Hops, mm-hmm. out of Starksboro. And we do actually have a couple local people up here, Sunny Island Hops, that just got going. So we take hops off them when we can. They're brand new, so they only have so many this year.
Right.
But, yeah, there are a couple mom-and-pop hop farms around that it's fun to work with them, too.
Yeah, it is great to see that happening here in Vermont. All right, Matt, now it's your turn to give me one of your favorites.
I think I'm into the Dark Necessity Stout right now, an export stout. It's slightly sweeter than the stout that we made during the springtime. And I just, you know, it's great for, almost a dessert beer. It's not super strong, and it's also not super sweet like some of the barrel-aged things that people have been making. But it's just a really good sipper for after dinner, and it can warm you up on some of those cooler nights.
Boy, and as we head into the winter, the stouts are just perfect, aren't they? For, for exactly what you said, warm us up after dinner. Couldn't be any better to pour one of those right now.
Absolutely.
Now, didn't you have one, Darren, that has kind of a honey flavor but no honey in it? Am I right about this?
Yeah, we say that the pale ale kind of has some notes of honey in there, and it primarily comes from the types of malt that we use. You get just a little bit of that honey sweetness character from the certain pale malt that we're using. So kind of unique. We say it has a honey note to it. A lot of people think that we put honey in it, but mm-hmm. we don't. It just comes from the malt.
Yeah, it's a beautiful flavor, and I really enjoy it. All right, so Matt, the current tasting room right there at Route 2 and Ferry Road, it's not big, but will it remain open all winter?
Yeah, absolutely, and we've just shortened our hours a little bit, and I believe, and Darren can correct me on this, I think we're going to be open. We'll still be open Thursday through Sunday, but
yeah, we're gonna do Thursday, Friday, 2 to 6, and then Saturday, Sunday, noon to 7. We were doing noon to 7 every day, but just for the winter, we're going to just shorten up a couple days.
All right, Thursday and Friday, 2 to 6, Saturday and Sunday, noon to 7. Now, Matt, there's something else you guys do, and I think this is pretty cool. You have a hard cider, which I don't see a lot of breweries doing. Why, first of all, do you do a hard cider when you are indeed a brewery?
Well, I think everybody knows the islands as having just amazing apple orchards. We wanted to take advantage of having such a great resource so local to us and some great generational farms running these orchards. And so, yeah, we made some hard cider on tap earlier in the year, and then we bottled it and bottle conditioned it, so it's available by the bottle at this point. And we're just starting up another couple rounds of cider with Allenholm Orchard on South Street. And making, I think Darren's got a funky one going that's got peaches and pears and apples. And then we're going to do our standard apple cider again. So we have it for the gluten-free people. They like to have an option on tap at breweries, and this is one of the ways to do it.
Oh, excellent point. Darren, tell us about that funky one you got going.
Yeah, so we actually have a few going. Since it's kind of still apple season here, we're getting them to press a couple for us. One of them is a mixed press with peaches and pears, and we're actually going to put a little bit of ginger and honey and probably some lavender in that one.
Wow.
And that's a mixed fermentation, so it's kind of got wild bacteria and wild yeast and stuff in there to give it a little bit of funky flavor. And then we should have a couple more ciders in the next few months after they get going, a farmhouse cider, and then in the springtime, the dry cider will probably be ready again. We let that one age quite a bit.
All right. And Matt, any other news from the brewery that you want to tell us before we wrap up here this morning?
We have a lot of really great German style beers that are canned and ready to go. So if people are looking to still capitalize on that Oktoberfest feeling, we have a Kolsch, an Oktoberfest, an alt beer, and we have lots of other, the Hefeweizen as well. So,
nice.
If anybody's looking to still remain in October, even though it's November, we've got some beer to go.
I think we can still enjoy it. Matt Bartles and Darren Orr own Two Heroes Brewing in South Hero. You can learn more about them at twoheroesbrewery.com. Darren and Matt, thanks so much for being on the show this morning.
Awesome. Thank you.
Great way to start our morning. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we'll return to learn about the Vermont Specialty Foods Association. And it is Game 6 of the World Series tonight as the Astros, down 3-2, host the Braves. Coverage begins at 7:09, game time at 8:09. And other sports we have coming up this week, we've got Norwich hockey both Friday and Saturday against UMass Boston at home on Friday at 6:40. Saturday, they will play Johnson and Wales at home, and that is 3:40 here on WDEV. This is Vermont Viewpoint.
At the Warren Store, we are busily preparing for the coming season of gatherings with family and friends. Upstairs, we have a stunning selection of Vermont's Laura Zindel pottery to grace your holiday table and a beautiful new line of honey-infused skincare. There are pillows and rugs to feather your nest and wooden jigsaw puzzles, toys, and games. Catan, anyone? Always free gift wrapping and still the best one-stop shopping in Vermont. So come for lunch in our Rockin' Deli and treat yourself to unique, fashionable finds upstairs. Open 7:30 to 5 daily. Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. Warren Village and WarrenStore.com.
Welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint. I'm Rick Sengary. Last segment, I was crowing about Vermont's beers. Now let's expand to the wonderful wide world of the state's specialty foods. We've got granola and game birds, butter and baked goods, maple syrup and switchel, dosa, pasta and whoopie pies, caramel, cookies, and quince. And that's just scratching the surface. And with the greatest eating holiday just several weeks away, it's probably a great time to familiarize yourself with some of Vermont's specialty offerings. Here to tell us about them is Erin Segrist. She's the executive director of the Vermont Specialty Foods Association. Erin, welcome to Vermont Viewpoint.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Listeners, to ask Erin about the association or any of its members, you can give us a call, 244-1777-877-291-8255. Email address is vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. What is the Vermont Specialty Food Association, Erin?
We are an organization made up of small all the way up to large Vermont-based food and beverage producers. And basically what we do is we share the philosophy with our members that providing customers with high-quality, innovative specialty foods made right here in Vermont is really the way to go. It's it brings a little bit of Vermont to your table, and we're really excited to be supporting our member businesses and promoting their products and also helping them to grow through education, helping them promote their products, and also collaborating state and nationwide.
So. About how many members are we talking about?
We've got about 170 members right now, but you know, there are a lot of specialty food producers out there that are just starting out, and we're really excited to get to know them and bring them into the fold as well.
When did the association get started, and why did it form?
Well, that's a really great question. I don't know the exact year, but my understanding is that we are the oldest specialty food association in the country. We are the first one that was started probably more than 25 years ago at this point. From the history that we have here in the office, we understand that it was created by the Vermont Agency of Agriculture and several volunteers. It started out as a volunteer board answering or checking messages once a week and checking the mail once a week. And here we are, you know, more than 25 years later now, and we're we'll full-time association. We have hired, about 3 years ago, we hired our first employee solely dedicated to the development and support of our members. And we have no plan to stop growing. We're really excited to be part of the industry here in Vermont.
There's somebody listening right now, Aaron, who said, that was me. I used to check that answering machine.
Yes.
Now, what's the connection between the VSFA and the Vermont Retail and Grocers Association?
Yeah, that's a great question, Rick. So we just talked about how the board was all volunteer. It's still volunteer, but it was a little less organized in the sense that they needed someone to send out the bills and collect dues payments, and also they felt it was time to create, you know, a gathering, at least one gathering every year. So the board that started the organization felt that a relationship with the Grocers Association at the time was beneficial, not just for their association, but also for the grocers. So they had approached my predecessor, Jim Harrison, and said, we just need someone to help us answer the phone and check the mail and send out some invoices. And it grew from there. Jim Harrison was an integral part of the growth of the association. And, you know, He started with the admin, right? He sent out the bills and deposited the checks and answered the phone, and then he planned two meetings a year, and now we're still doing those two meetings a year, but we're also collaborating with the Vermont Retail and Grocers Association on several different projects. Over the pandemic, we hosted several virtual tastings so that producers could get their products in front of retailers. We do member mingles, or our connects is what we call them. So it allows retailers to get to know producers a little better and understand their story. And we come up with lots of ideas, and I'm not sure how we execute them all, but we have a fantastic group here in the office, and we're just really passionate about supporting Vermont producers.
Yeah, I can see how that's advantageous to have the food producers with that direct line to the Retail and Grocers Association throughout the state.
Right.
How has the number of specialty food producers grown in the state, say, in the last decade or so?
So that's a good question. We don't have exact numbers, but if you think about all of the farmers markets out there around the state and all of those farm-to-table, you know, producers that are coming up with delicious recipes in their kitchen, some of those producers have decided they want to grow their business. And if they really have chosen to invest their time and their money, you know, those businesses, usually we come across those businesses through a phone call or, you know, via email. And so you know, there's really no exact number. I would say we're probably looking at more than 300 producers, maybe even closer to 400 producers at this point.
Well, as I mentioned, we do have Thanksgiving coming up in 3.5 weeks. So is there anything for a traditional Turkey Day meal that we can't find made right here in Vermont?
That you can't find?
Yeah.
I highly doubt that. You know, I think it's all about being creative, right? Mashed potatoes, that's a staple on my family's Thanksgiving table. You can spice up those mashed potatoes with products that you can find right here in Vermont. You've got dessert. We've got some fantastic chocolate makers. We've got cookie makers. Cheese, obviously, we are very well known in this state for the fantastic cheese and crackers. It's going to be really hard to find something that you can put on the table that you can't find in Vermont.
I think we even have cranberries raised here in Vermont, so Vermont cranberries.
We do,
right?
Yes.
So I'm not too worried about that. What are some specialties that we will be able to get from Vermont specialty food producers for our Thanksgiving meal?
So thank you for asking, actually. Our assistant director, Alex, has done some work, and she actually has put together a Vermont Lover's Guide to Thanksgiving. It's right on our webpage, vtspecialtyfoods.org. If you go to our homepage, it'll be right there on the banner, and you can click on an article with several different producers and the products that they provide. And that's just a sample. And if you scroll all the way down, you can click on our member directory and get a full list of all of the products that you can find on your, you know, on the shelves of your country store or in a specialty products store here in Vermont. And even in the large grocery stores, you can find products. So whether it's, you know, Vermont Nut-Free Chocolates or Stewart Maple or Silo Distillery, there's plenty of options and certainly something for everybody.
What's interesting is I do make my choices of where I shop based on the availability of Vermont products. So, you know, it really is a driver, and I don't know if you find that as well, for getting people to patronize particular either general stores or local supermarkets.
Yes, that we've heard that from a lot of customers, actually. You know, certainly I don't know about you, Rick, but I make several stops on my grocery shopping day.
Yeah.
Whether it's the local co-op or, you know, one of the larger grocery stores or the country store, you know, just outside of town that I live in. But yeah, it's really about supporting local, and really you can't go wrong with any of the specialty food products that are made here in Vermont.
And why is that better to support local? Why is it better to buy these specialty foods from Vermont companies?
Well, I think that's an age-old question, and there's an age-old answer, right? The food producers here in Vermont are part of our community. They're one of us. They're supporting our friends and our neighbors by giving them jobs or offering them a position. And it's not just a job, I should say. It's certainly an opportunity to learn about the products that they're making. And those businesses are also normally, I would say, a good portion of our members are purchasing products from farmers here in Vermont. You know, so they're not just providing jobs, they're also supporting outside businesses or farmers. You know, it's an all-encompassing community-focused business that most of these producers are.
And haven't we learned during this pandemic, supply chain issues certainly less affecting those around us and the local producers?
Yes, that's a great point. Yes, you know, the more local your produce and your products and your specialty food items are, you know, there's less disruption when you're shopping locally than if you were to shop nationally. And I will share also that many of these producers are very online savvy also. So many of them have online stores. You can order directly from them. So that eliminates part of the supply chain right there. Just go straight to their website and order it that way. But of course, you know, if you are down the street from a country store or you're swinging by your neighborhood market, certainly stop in and check for some specialty food products there. And if they don't have them, make sure you ask your grocer, and they'll certainly, you know, the small independent grocers have been fantastic in taking notes and doing some additional research and outreach to make sure that they're bringing in products that customers are looking for.
Aaron, when you talk to people out of state about these products and these Vermont producers, what is the reaction you get about the Vermont brand?
Well, I think there's something special about the Vermont brand. There was a study a number of years ago now where I think it was the Agency of Ag had determined that you could actually charge more for the Vermont brand. I think Vermont is synonymous with, quality and certainly innovation. And so, you know, it's always really exciting to spend some time down at the Summer Fancy Food Show in New York City. And we run the Vermont Pavilion, which is a group of about 20 producers that set up their products and have buyers come and visit, you know, and taste products and hopefully place orders for those products over the course of a week. And the Vermont Pavilion is always incredibly busy and always buzzing with excitement. There's actually a story about prior to my time, Martha Stewart actually came to the Summer Fancy Food Show one year, and she said, "I'm going to the Vermont Pavilion first." So, you know, when Martha Stewart goes to the Vermont Pavilion before she goes anywhere else in the world, she's, you know, I think there's a lot to say about that. And it, like I said, it's about innovation and high value, and certainly there's a lot to be said about the quality of products made here in Vermont.
Wow, thank you, Martha Stewart. Your website, which is vtspecialtyfoods.org, would make anyone hungry with this member map page. You talked a little bit about it, but explain how people can use it. I had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, it's pretty self-explanatory. If you go to vtspecialtyfoods.org, and if you hover over the word members, you can scroll down and find a member map. And it's as simple as, it's basically a Google map, and it has little highlights of where you can go throughout the state. So you can zoom in and out, and, you know, maybe you want to find a location, a producer close to your hometown. Scroll in and or zoom in or zoom out, and you can certainly find all of the different locations of all of our members throughout the state. And hopefully over the next several years, we'll see more and more popping up throughout Vermont.
I don't want to slight anybody because you have 170 members, but I found Tavernier Chocolates in Brattleboro. Didn't know about them before, and discovered something called chocolate salami. Have you seen this stuff?
Yes, I have, and it's delicious too.
Is it? God, it looks great.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Vermont specialty food product. They're all delicious, right?
Right.
But how can you go wrong with chocolate salami?
There
you go. Have that on your Thanksgiving dinner table, and there's a conversation starter right there.
Absolutely. That is one that I will be ordering from. Do you find yourself scrolling around and finding new and wonderful items? I know you should be working all the time, but it's part of your job, right, some of the research.
Yes. One of the perks of my job is that we get to work with all of these producers, and part of working with them is tasting the delicious products. At our annual meeting, we actually we provide an opportunity for our producers to donate some products that are incorporated into lunch. So, you know, it's a delicious lunch as a foundation, but then just add some specialty food products that members have donated, and it just elevates that lunch you know, every year. And every year we're trying new products, and every year we are just blown away again with the innovation. It's so inspiring and so much fun to work with these producers and to constantly see new and delicious ideas coming out of Vermont.
Do you have a rather unique specialty food or producer that is a member of the VSFA that you can remember having been served?
Yes. Well, I mean, they're all unique in their own way.
Right.
But we actually don't have just human food. We have some producers that make dog treats.
Ah.
You know, we have, and it's more than one member. You know, so it's for the whole family. it's food for the whole family, whether it's on your Thanksgiving dinner table or in the dog bowl, or I will say there are no cat treats yet, but I would be surprised.
There's an opportunity.
It didn't pop up soon. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, another one that I'm really intrigued by is it Savoret Soda Jam and Pickle in Bristol? What do you know about them?
Yes, yeah, Savoret.
Savoret.
Those are new and innovative products. I want to say that she has a great little pop-up up in Burlington as well. Mm. She's new to the scene, but we're really excited to watch her grow. And, you know, it's delicious no matter what you're trying from her. She's a fantastic producer. Really
unique
creative
flavors of soda. And I think Savoret, is that, say it again, Savoret?
Savoret.
Savoret. Yeah. You can pop in Bristol, and nice to hear that they're in Burlington as well, and see what they've got whipped up. All right, anything else that you think we absolutely need to have on that Thanksgiving table that one of our Vermont specialty producers can provide?
Oh, it's tough to call them out. I mean, they're all delicious. I will say, if you're having a cheese board, you have to have, obviously, Vermont cheese. Mm. You know, have a different array of cheeses from some Vermont producers. Make sure you add that Blake Hill preserves in there. My favorite from Blake Hill is actually, there's a dandelion, I'm going to butcher it. It's a dandelion jam that you look at it and say, why would anyone want to eat that? But it is amazing. It is my most favorite jam that they make.
Wow.
Obviously, if you're having salad, make sure that you get some Olivia's croutons. Those are absolutely delicious. If you want a really great dessert, you can't go wrong with Vermont nut-free chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And also, what's another one? There's so many. I feel terrible calling them all out.
That's all right. My mouth is already watering.
Yes.
Yeah, what a great time. Erin Segrest is the executive director of the Vermont Specialty Foods Association. And again, you can learn about what they do and all of their members. Play with that map. You will have a great time at vtspecialtyfoods.org. Erin, great having you on the show this morning. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Rick. Great to talk with you.
All right, take care. We're going to take a break for news, and then we'll be back to hear about a dance-based musical from singer Taryn Noel. And today at 1 o'clock, it's Equal Time with Travin, and then we've got 120 musical minutes of The Getaway with Mr. Greg Hooker. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
At the Warren Store, we are busily preparing for the coming season of gatherings with family and friends. Upstairs, we have a stunning selection of Vermont's Laura Zindel pottery to grace your holiday table and a beautiful new line of honey-infused skincare. There are pillows and rugs to feather your nest and wooden jigsaw puzzles, toys, and games. Catan, anyone? Always free gift wrapping and still the best one-stop shopping in Vermont. So come for lunch in our Rockin' Deli and treat yourself to unique, fashionable finds upstairs. Open 7:30 to 5 daily. Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. Warren Village and WarrenStore.com.
This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. So far this morning, we've had Darren and Erin. So next up, It's got to be Taryn. Taryn Noel is well-regarded as a Vermont singer who does solo work, also plays with Rick in the All-Star Ramblers. But beginning next Thursday, one of Taryn's creations will take the stage at the Lyric Creative Space in South Burlington. It's called Looking for the Heart of Saturday Night. And here to tell us all about it is Taryn Noel. Taryn, welcome to Vermont Viewpoint.
Hi, Rick. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Great. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Good. Thanks so much for having me on.
Sure. Listeners, to ask Taryn a question about her new show, you can call us at 244-1777-877-291-8255. Taryn, I'm not sure my introduction aptly describes your background and talent, so tell us a little bit more about you.
Oh, thank you so much, Rick. Well, as you said, I'm a very lucky member to be part of Rick and the All-Star Ramblers with Rick Norcross's Western Swing Band. And I know that you shared, I have done some solo work, and I've played with my longtime jazz pal, Joe Davidian. We've teamed up many times. We've been best friends for about 25 years, actually.
Wow.
East Montpelier native, the great Joe Davidian, and now he lives in New York City. And in this COVID time, I will admit I started dabbling in some songwriting. So I released a Christmas single last year, an original tune called Vermont Christmas Waltz, and a couple of others that I got to play out live a little bit last summer, which was really fun. And late in the game, I just was like, oh, I'll just give this a try. So who knows, maybe that writing of some tunes helped me put together a book musical. But I went to theater school in New York in my early 20s and had quite an amazing education and time, and then got to work in summer stock and professional theater in New York and in the Midwest. And all of those experiences, I remember probably about more like 15 years ago, I was working with Dan Ski of Waterbury, who sadly passed away 2 years ago. But anyone in Vermont that got to work with Dan was a very lucky person. Anyone in the country, actually. He was an amazing pianist and composer and arranger and really like a second grandfather to me. And we were working on some tunes, and he was arranging for me. And I told him some of my New York stories, and he said, gosh, you know, you really should write these down, and you should really write a show about this. And one of the great jazz standards called Sweet Lorraine, that song is a favorite of mine, but also that character kind of became an alias of mine. And he said, I've got it. You should write a show called The Misadventures of Sweet Lorraine. So it stuck in my head, and that is actually our Act One title of this show. And I will admit, it's kind of about my alias. It's kind of about me in the city and, like, you know, foibles and fumblings and funny. And it's very family oriented. It's a very wholesome show, but it's like a funny journey of a young woman's, you know, goes to the city to tries to make it big. We have all seen a million musicals and movies about that very thing, and novels as well. But it's really about family and love. And so the first act really follows her journey and about all the people in her life that help her and that kind of creates stumbling blocks for her to give us some tension and some humor. And then the second act really shines a light onto all these other slices of relationship that I thought would be really interesting to tell stories about. It is dance driven. So it's a dance, we're calling it a dance, original dance musical. But the whole concept of that was inspired by a show I saw 20 years ago in New York called Contact. It was composed, written, and directed and choreographed by one of my choreographic idols, Susan Stroman, who's done a ton of work on Broadway. And it was such a groundbreaking play. Dance really took center stage for the acting. Like, there was so much acting going on within the movement, and I thought that was so beautiful. And you don't see that all the time. So 20 years ago, I was like, this is so inspiring. I really want to do this someday. And now that someday is today.
It is indeed. It's called
Look. I'm sorry if I spoke too long. That was
no, you're fine.
Journey, but then.
Yeah. So it's Looking for the Heart of Saturday Night. What does it take to create a musical like this, Taryn?
Well, a good friend of mine who lives in Stowe, her name is Jane Harisi. She is on the board for Lyric Theater. And again, in this COVID pandemic aware time last year, she said, you know, we're looking to maybe do some original content, some new work, not on the film stage, not on the main stage, in some smaller theaters, smaller spaces. They do a lot of stuff outdoors. It's amazing. They're really keeping the theater fire and the creativity fires burning over there at Lyric, even in COVID times. It's really amazing. But my friend Jane said, you know, that they're looking for something new. Would you like to write something? You've always loved this dance-driven, you know, musical awareness that really, like, looks at all these different slices of people and humanity and relationships and has humor and has joy and sadness and all of those things, but really dance is a large vehicle. I said, well, sure, I've got a couple ideas. So I put together a proposal, and they accepted us, and then that was in March. So really from March until now, it was just writing the show, figuring out what I wanted to say, what I felt was like in my heart, and what I thought was funny to me. It might not be funny to everybody, but again, I love working with all ages. So it's a cast that has our youngest actor is 11. I think our eldest is 65. So it spends a really nice range of ages and walks of life. And I've always really loved that anyway, just working with kids and adults alike all at the same time. There's a real sense of community when you do that for me. So I really love that. So yeah, so James said you should write something. I did a lot of drafts later. We have a script and an amazing, phenomenal cast that really signed on to something that they had no idea what it was, because it's, you know, no one knows the story yet. So that was, I think, a big leap of faith for them to say, yeah, we'll do this. And it's been phenomenal. And we're in sort of pre-production right now. We go into tech this weekend. So yeah, I feel very, very lucky. And it's constantly a process of discovery every day that something new sort of pops up as a great thing to highlight. But yeah, that's sort of how we got to here.
Well, we'll find out next Thursday how funny you really are and what the rest of the world thinks of your humor. We're 9 days away from the opening. So, you know, how close are you and the cast and crew to being ready for opening night? How do you feel right now?
I think we feel good. I think it feels like this is the time where the rubber meets the road, as they say. We're just really stitching everything together, letting them really learn their show as they continue to run it. And just we're tightening and tuning and giving the chance for them to breathe life into it. And then come next Thursday, as you said, it really becomes their show. Yeah. And I just get to be a very loving and cheerful fan.
That's a great way to describe it. You mentioned that the cast, is, you know, ages 11 to 65. So who will be performing looking for the heart of Saturday night?
Well, two fairly local, wonderful mother and daughter team, Molly Mitchell and her daughter Hattie Mitchell, two great friends of mine. Molly runs and owns Stowe Children's Theater. Her husband, Dr. Shannon Mitchell, is an eye doctor in Whitfield. They're a fabulous family. So her and her daughter are both in it. Her daughter's 13, and she's in her early 40s. They're great friends of mine. And then, honestly, beyond Molly, Hattie, and myself, most of the cast is Burlington, South Burlington, Essex, Jericho, Shelburne. So they really come from Chittenden County proper, but we have a little Lamoille County representation. So,
all right. Give us the schedule of performances, Taryn.
Sure. So it opens next week on Thursday, Friday, Saturday evenings at 7:30, November 11th through the 13th. And there's a matinee next Sunday, the 14th of November at 2 p.m. And then the following week, we're up again Thursday, Friday, Saturday, November 18th through the 20th. And closing on Saturday night, of course, looking for the heart of Saturday night at 7:30. And there's an extra Saturday matinee the second weekend on November 20th at 2 p.m. So two matinees. The first on the Sunday, the second on the Saturday, six evening shows, so eight shows total. And what we're doing is a suggested donation of $25 at the Lyric Theater website. It's www.lyrictheatervt.org, and that's the best way to reserve your tickets.
Now tell us about the Lyric Creative Space. You said it's a really wonderful performance space. Give us a little idea of what it's like.
Absolutely. Thank you, Rick. Yeah, it's a fairly new building. A few years ago, Lyric had a warehouse also in the South Burlington, Williston area, but they moved into a bigger space. And Lyric, as listeners might know or recall, that prior to this COVID pandemic time, they have for almost 50 years occupied the Flynn Theater twice a year, every November and every April, doing large main stage musicals with just a tremendous tremendous Herculean effort in terms of community involvement. And Lyric is a completely volunteer organization, so that is amazing. Like, you know, 100-plus people between the cast and the production team and the crew really coming together for, again, almost 50 years. So Lyric decided they needed a rehearsal space that was really a replica of the Flynn, and that's exactly what they did. It's amazing. Our rehearsal space, so our stage for Looking for the Heart of Saturday Night, is essentially the Flynn, just moved to South Burlington.
Wow.
Very near the airport, and it's beautiful. It's the exact dimensions of the Flynn stage, which is really kind of exciting. And it's a black box space, meaning there's no proscenium. It's really a long rectangle, and then the creative team gets to do what they want with that rectangle. So we have wings and legs and crossover and traveler and a beautiful set design by, again, my friend and protagonist who suggested I write this whole thing, Jane Harises of Stowe. So yeah, it's this big blank slate, and a team can come in and do with it what they want, and it's really awesome to be in something that is a reminder of the Flynn. It's really exciting.
Oh, and you're going to fill it with dance and music. There is a lot of music diversity in your show, so tell us about some of the music that you've got in Looking for the Heart of Saturday Night.
Well, thanks so much, Rick. Right, that those are two quite different artists and tunes. And I like your idea, though, having them both at the same Thanksgiving table. That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
I'd like to be a fly on the wall for that meal.
You're invited as well. If I get them to come over, you're invited as well.
What a party we would have. That
yep.
sounds amazing. You're right. The tune design, the sound design for the show is really, really, really varied. And I think that's honestly on purpose. As I started to put the book and the script together, I was really thinking about what feelings and what qualities, what would kind of augment this moment or this story or this interaction or this pitfall or this triumph. So I just sort of found tunes that maybe some things that I had loved for a long time, did research, found new things, and it really covers the waterfront. So as you said, Billy Idol and Tom Waits. Tom Waits, of course, gives us our title of the show. And at the end of the play, kind of called the 11th hour number, we get to finally hear that beautiful song, Looking for the Heart of Saturday Night. Other artists that are in that cover material in the tune, we have Jerome Kern and Irving Berlin. We have some Lady Gaga. We've got really contemporary artists like Louis Capaldi. We have a few of his tunes in there, and some Pink Martini, which is always a favorite. I think even in Vermont, people, whenever they come touring here, they really sell out. I feel like it just covers a lot of different range, and I think it's mostly for just storytelling. I think as I was putting the script together, I just sort of looked for what would really make this moment come to life. And we have a little Queen at the very, very end as a little bonus. But yeah, really it ranges from Great American Songbook, jazz, Tin Pan Alley to some contemporary. And then a lot of tunes really that were featured in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s. The show, I should say that, the show, because it follows sort of my trajectory of when I was in the city myself, it really starts in the early 2000s. So it's a show that lives much of the time about 20 years ago. And in the second act, we sort of flash forward a little bit as well. So there are some more contemporary references and settings, but it kind of goes back and forth from this early 2000s to today and sort of in between.
Well, so a great mix of music styles. How about dance styles?
Yeah, you're so great. Great question. I would say also quite a range. I'm somebody that sort of grew up really studying Broadway jazz really as a mainstay, and then really got into ballroom and Latin dance when I was in New York myself. So I have a fair amount of that, partner dancing, swing dancing, and then a lot of modern and what we call today contemporary lyrical. So I would say really sort of straddles those with some just good old fashioned like 80s pop style dancing too. So Broadway jazz, contemporary lyrical, ballroom, Latin and modern and some good old pop dancing.
Nice. Now, I know you're directing. Will you be performing as well?
No, my gosh. I think that would be.
So how difficult is that for you? who's always been out front to be in the wings for these performances.
Oh, it's so nice. It's so lovely to just be the person on the other side of the table. And to be totally fair, I have done a fair amount of being on the other side of the footlights, as they say, which it's really, it's such a pleasure. It's such a different vehicle. And I have also been in productions before, both community and professional, where I've done the choreography and been a performer. But I would say this is such a blessing to be able just to sit back and help sort of facilitate and be a game master a little bit, help move chess pieces around the board. So
all right.
That's what it feels like.
Well, it sounds like you're really enjoying that part of it. Tickets are available how? Tell people how they can get tickets.
So the Lyric Theatre website is the best way to grab tickets, and it's a 8-performance run starting next Thursday, as Rick so kindly said. The website is www.lyrictheatrevt.org, and the show again runs November 11th to the 14th and the 18th to the 20th, and there are three evening shows each week of the run at 7:30 p.m. Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights, and then at 2 o'clock matinee on the first Sunday, the 14th of November, and then a 2 p.m. matinee on the last Saturday, November 20th. So 8 shows total.
And what COVID protocols are being instituted for those attending any of the performances?
Oh, excellent question. Thank you, Rick. So because of COVID protocol, we are asking that everybody that comes to the show wears a mask and has a vaccination card. The regular form of a CDC vaccination card and matching photo ID and masks will all be required from the audience. And it's a small house. It's a 75-seat black box theater. So and we've got some good spatial awareness happening with the seating, so people are not terribly on top of each other, and there's plenty of room. So that's great.
Now, is this the first musical that you have created?
It is, and I mean, I know it's sort of a funny term to call it a musical because it's all amazing cover tunes, right? There's
right.
no original music in the show, but I will say that when I mentioned earlier that this sort of came from Susan Stroman's brainchild of Contact, that show that was produced a little over 20 years ago at Lincoln Center in New York, that was a similar style. It was all popular music, you know, ranging from classical music to jazz and pop and swing music, but it was also of that similar style. So I think it probably lodged in my brain that was a really great, great idea. You take other people's great songs and it helps you form your story and your book. So no original music, I'm afraid, this time, but
that's all right.
Original dialogue and new choreography.
Well, what has that learning curve been like for you to create this?
Oh, my gosh. So multifaceted. I think I've learned to stay really open about what other people bring to the table, especially when you're in the rehearsal room and you're starting to stage the show, and just not be too fixed on one idea. I think, you know, as always, doing a ton of research and being as prepared as possible is always a great motto for life in general, right? But I think just staying open to maybe a better way of doing something or and then also knowing when to really stick to my guns and like really following my vision or my heart on something. So it's like, I think, a combination of both of those things. And just research, preparation. And then, you know, I know there's maybe different viewpoints on like writing what you know, but I think I've always been a fan of that expression, like write what you know. And so that's really what I did. I just wrote what was in my heart and wrote from my own experiences and took my dear mentor, Dan Ski's advice, and finally, at least act one, have a show called The Misadventures of Sweet Lorraine. So,
how is it going to feel when that curtain goes up next Thursday?
I just think joyful and emotional I think both of those things just for all the time that everyone has given and their generosity in that and how hard they've worked and how hard the whole village has worked. Like I said earlier, Lyric is a completely volunteer organization. So people really come together and they really show up. And this cast and this team really has was something they didn't know what it was going to be. They didn't know what the story was, and they took a leap, and that's so amazing to me. So I would say equal parts joyful and emotional and celebratory, I'm sure, too.
That's great. We got about 30 seconds left. Performing with Rick and the All-Star Ramblers, how many times have you traveled in the Mighty Pickle?
The Mighty Pickle. Oh, my gosh. Probably 3 dozen, 4 dozen over the course. It didn't go out on every gig, but it was so special. And, oh, my gosh, the fans of Rick that got to come and just, like, sit on the bus and take a selfie or just have a chance to get come and tour. The bus, as you know, it's quite an icon here in Vermont, as is Rick Norcross. But it's an amazing bus, for sure.
Taryn Noel is the director, choreographer of Looking for the Heart of Saturday Night. That opens next Thursday, runs through November 20th at the Lyric Creative Space in South Burlington. To learn more, order tickets, you can go to lyrictheatervt.org. Taryn, this is a lot of fun. Thanks so much for letting us know about the show.
Thank you so much, Rick. Have a wonderful day.
You too. All right, we're going to take a break for CBS News, then we'll be back to hear about Vermont's Weatherization Assistance Program. And a reminder that today at noon, we've got the governor's COVID-19 response news conference. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
At the Warren Store, we are busily preparing for the coming season of gatherings with family and friends. Upstairs, we have a stunning selection of Vermont's Laura Zindel pottery to grace your holiday table and a beautiful new line of honey-infused skincare. There are pillows and rugs to feather your nest and wooden jigsaw puzzles, toys, and games. Catan, anyone? Always free gift wrapping and still the best one-stop shopping in Vermont. So come for lunch in our Rockin' Deli and treat yourself to unique, fashionable finds upstairs. Open 7:30 to 5 daily. Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. Warren Village and WarrenStore.com.
This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. It had stayed unseasonably warm for quite some time this year, which was a boon to those who love to wait as long as they possibly can until they turn on the heat or start a fire in the wood stove, that Vermont thing that we love to do. But now the mercury is dipping, and Roger Hill has been sounding the alarm that it's time to get those snow tires on the car or truck. This is also that time of year when you realize that maybe your home could really use some weatherization. But how do you get that done? And what kind of programs are available to you? Those questions and more can all be answered by my next guest. Jeff Wilcox is Vermont's Weatherization Assistance Program Director. Jeff, thanks so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Now, listeners, to ask Jeff your weatherization questions, you can give us a call at 244-1777. Toll free, it's 877-291-8255. You can also email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. Jeff, what is the Weatherization Assistance Program?
It's a program that exists in every state in the country, and it's typically run by a state office, which is what I work for. I work just down the road here at the Agency of Human Services Department for Children and Families in the Office of Economic Opportunity. So it's a program for lower income or income qualified folks where if they're eligible, we go out and improve the energy efficiency of their home, in the goal of reducing their energy bills, putting money back in their pocket. And we do that in a variety of ways.
Well, let's first talk about eligibility. Who are the people who would be eligible for this assistance?
Yep. So it depends on the number of people in the household, and we look at gross income for the last 12 months. For an example, a family of four, if your gross income is $67,300 or less, you'd be eligible. We prioritize families that receive fuel assistance. So if you receive fuel assistance, you're automatically eligible.
Okay. So with that kind of figure, probably a lot more people would be eligible than might think initially that they are.
Yes, definitely. The incomes vary depending on the number of people in the household, like I said, but more folks are eligible than would think, like you just said.
Yeah. All right. So what types of weatherization assistance is available?
So the process starts by, obviously, eligibility. Mm-hmm. So I guess maybe let me just start. We have five providers that spread out throughout the state, and actually sixth, we've just added a statewide multifamily provider. Mm. So these agencies each have like three counties of the state in their catchment area, we call it. They do the eligibility piece, and then when the clients are eligible, they start with an efficiency coach visit where they go out to the home and talk with the client, kind of put them at ease, talk about things they can do themselves to save energy, do some electrical efficiency stuff that's funded by Efficiency Vermont, like replacement of appliances and lighting. And then that visit's followed by an energy auditor who goes out and determines what cost-effectively can be done to save energy, heating and cooling bills. So they do high-tech diagnostics like an infrared camera to find out where the insulation is missing or performing poorly, do a blower door test, which measures the air leakage of a home. So we find the areas that are causing the high heating bills, and then we determine how to address those. So it's a really – it's a program that's tailored to the issues in the home. We just don't go in and do things that we think are going to work. We
right.
go in and do things that we know will work to save energy, improve the comfort of the home. And they have crews, their in-house crews that work for the six agencies that go out and
– Let's mention the six agencies.
I should talk about them a little separately.
Yeah.
So the five agencies have traditionally had the program. It's 45 years old this year.
Wow.
And four are community action agencies, and one is a standalone nonprofit weatherization agency. They just have weatherization. The other four have also Head Start and other programs.
That's like Capstone Community
Action. Capstone, Southeast Vermont Community Action, Champlain Valley of Office of Economic Opportunity, Bennington-Rutland Opportunity Council, Community Action in Southwestern Vermont. And NETO is the standalone nonprofit Northeast Employment and Training Organization.
But you've added a sixth. So who's the sixth? We've got to give them some love.
Is kind of a subsidiary of Capstone, but a separate group, 3E Thermal. And they do strictly multifamily weatherization. And they do it statewide. So they'll go to any part of the state. And weatherize multifamily, which is five units or more in a building that are eligible. Still, the clients have to be eligible for services.
Do you know how many families or households that you help with this program each year?
Sure do. that's part of my job, the numbers. In the last few years, we've averaged about 800. COVID put a damper on
wow.
things. We've 800 to 900. This year, we'll be doing a couple hundred more the next 2 years due to some recent funding, ARPA funds.
Oh, right.
Yep. It's a good program. We do a lot of households across the state.
That's a substantial number, yeah. Jeff. We're heading into the winter months, so is this a good time, a bad time for someone to seek weatherization assistance through the program?
Yes, it's always a good time to apply for services. The last number of years, we've had what we call a wait list, you know, more people looking for our help than we can provide. So we kind of have a waiting list of clients that we prioritize based on need. Recently, our waiting list has dwindled, so that's good for people applying.
Yeah.
We're a little worried that we don't want to run out of homes to serve.
Right.
So apply now. As soon as you can, and the sooner you'll get served.
Well, what is the kind of turnaround time between when someone might apply and then get the determination that they are indeed eligible, and then someone would come to check
right.
out their home?
So each agency kind of handles their own outreach and the verification of services, following our guidelines, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So the wait list varies between agencies. Statewide, it's an average of about 2 to 3 months. So if it – say we'll talk about an average statewide client applies
sure.
now, they'd be deemed eligible. And, you know, they have to get certain paperwork back to the agency, and then they verify the income that they're eligible. We also ask for fuel records, electricity consumption so that we can – you know, get information together so when we go out to the home, we can do the best job evaluating the situation. But if they get their paperwork back to the agency ASAP within a couple of weeks, they'll know if they're eligible or not. And then, like I said, a 2 to 3 month wait list is when they should be contacted by the efficiency coach, who is the first person in their door, who sits down with them at the table, talks about the program, and then followed by the energy auditor within a few weeks, maybe. It varies.
Yeah.
And then soon after that, the crews, you know, the workers who go out and put, you know, the boots on the ground folks, who do the insulation and the air sealing, as well as we have contractors, heating contractors go out and clean and tune heating systems, make any necessary repairs to combustion appliances.
All right. Now, you said you're the numbers guy. So how much is available through the program overall and for a single person or household?
Yeah, good point. So it's free. It's totally free for applicants. The funds come from a combination of sources. For the last 30 years, it's been either Department of Energy funds or our state is lucky. We've had what was called the Weatherization Trust Fund is now called the Home Weatherization Assistance Program. So we have funds that we develop or produce here in Vermont that goes to our program. So it's great to have that ability to, you know, help more people.
But is there a limit to how much a home might get? I mean, if my home needs, I don't know, $8,000 worth of help, or the, you know, another one needs 12. I mean, is there a limit to how much a specific home would get in assistance?
Yeah, on average, we spend $85,000 to $10,000 per home, all costs.
Oh, wow.
So there isn't a home where we can't comprehensively and holistically treat the home. You know, we go into homes still these days with no insulation in them, and our budget allows us to properly air seal and then insulate on top of that, so as well as clean and tunes. So, yeah, we're not hampered by budget. We're pretty comprehensive and produce about 30% energy savings for household. And on top of that, electrical savings, you know, by the replacement of older inefficient appliances and, you know, replacement of some lighting with more energy efficient lighting.
Wow.
So we cut their electric bill and their heating bill. Drastically.
Jeff, how does someone check to see if they're eligible and how they apply?
Sure. We have a website, a state website. It can be accessed weatherization.vermont.gov. And in there, there's a link to our income eligibility guidelines and a link to the five local weatherization agencies where they would apply directly with them. So that's the best way to get this information.
What types of services, free services, are available through the program?
So, like I mentioned, we go out and figure out exactly what's going to give us the best return on our investment, best return for the client, energy savings, as well as improved health and safety is the term we use. So when we go out and tighten up a home, make it less drafty and better insulated, there's things we have to pay attention to, otherwise we could be causing more harm than good. So combustion appliances, we have to make sure they all draft safely and are running efficiently and are producing excessive carbon monoxide. You know, make sure they're running safe. Indoor air quality, we look at bathroom fans, exhaust fans, and kitchen fans, make sure they're operational and taking care of the moisture that's produced in a home, because when we tighten that up, the moisture from showering or cooking is going to elevate the humidity in the home because it can't leak out of the home as fast as it used to. So we have to make sure the bathroom fans and kitchen fans are used and are venting outside of the home, not into the attic, causing more, you know, mold issues.
Oh, right.
So there's a lot of things that we look at that provide a lot more a lot of benefits to the household other than reduced energy bills. You know, indoor air quality. There's a lot of studies that are showing that regular weatherization can improve the health of the occupants in that home. Less sick, missed days at work, less sick days for kids at school.
Wow.
And we see it, you know, ourselves when we're out there at the homes when we're all done and inspecting the work. You know, people say, oh, I'm just so much more comfortable. I haven't had a runny nose, you know, all kinds of stuff, cool stuff that we hear.
You said this program has been in place for 45 years. Why is the program in place?
Yeah, the Department of Energy created the program in, I believe, 76, back when the first energy crisis occurred.
Mm-hmm.
They it was developed as a social services program to help low-income folks, you know, pay for the high price of energy in their homes and stay warm. And there's a program in all 50 states and 7 territories. And part of the one of the cool parts of our program, and we're looking for workers in our program, it's a great career and it's a really cool network. It's a network amongst our state and our 6 providers. You know, we all work together and, you know, meet regularly and have trainings. And but we also, as a state, there's a network amongst the 50 states that we, you know, share best practice and help each other. You know, we're all doing the same thing. There may be different regional climates. You know, the folks in the South are trying to save air conditioning.
All right.
But up here, we're trying to save heating. But, you know, it's just a really a good career and a network to work in with a lot of advantages for folks who are looking for a new career.
Well, what type of people are you looking for? What type of jobs are open there?
So right now, with the increased funding, we're going to be weatherizing this year alone, maybe 250 more households than last year. And that means we need more boots on the ground, crew workers out in the homes doing the air sealing, the insulation, the installation of bathroom fans and ceiling ductwork, stuff like that. So each agency's been hiring and still is hiring. And on that link that I gave you earlier, you can be connected to those agencies to send in your application or inquire about working for them.
That's weatherization.vermont.gov?
Yep.
All right. So if someone's approved, how do they get the work done? Someone comes, they don't have to hire someone out and pay and get reimbursed. Explain what happens so people really understand what this weatherization assistance program really is about.
Sure. So it's totally free of cost to the applicants. Once they're deemed eligible, the weatherization program or agency in their area will make contact with them and schedule the multiple steps in the process. And, again, totally free. And, you know, we treat our clients like paying customers because they are. They've paid their taxes all their life. And, you know, we're only going to do things – we're going to prescribe things that we need to do for our program. There's expectations from the Department of Energy and our state statutes, you know, that we have to follow health and safety guidelines and do the right work. But the clients are active participants in our program, and – we explain what we want to do, you know, give them options to some degree, and work with them to make sure they're good with what we're going to do and understand what we're going to do, all free, and providing significant multiple benefits for them at the same time.
I'm glad you mentioned some of the knock-on effects of sealing up a home very tightly. Our hosts of House Calls here on WDEV really stress that there are those important considerations.
Yeah, I mean, our program's 45 years old. I've been in it 22, and we've evolved significantly since 45 years ago. It started with caulking clapboards on the outside and putting plastic over windows, and we didn't know anything about combustion appliance safety. Thank goodness we didn't get homes very tight by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But as we've evolved new practices, we're really good at tightening up a home, but we're also really good at testing all the conditions that could backfire on us and correcting those so that we make sure people are safer when we're gone than when we started.
Yeah. Who would you encourage to look into the program and to apply?
I would – anyone who, you know, feels like you can't pay your heating bills and you struggle, anyone who receives fuel assistance should definitely apply if they haven't received weatherization in the last 15 years. That's the one caveat. If the home has received weatherization in the last 15 years, it's not eligible until that 15 years has passed. But folks that are cold in their home, struggle to pay their bills, it'd be worth looking at our income guidelines on our website. And if you think you're close or under those guidelines, you know, connect with the local agency and get your application in ASAP.
Do they have to own their home? Could they be renting a home or apartment or condominium?
Glad you asked that. Mm-hmm. So We serve owner-occupied and rental buildings. The key is the household has to be income eligible. So
okay.
if a low-income household is renting a one-unit home, a single-unit
sure.
home, the landlord has certain health and safety responsibilities. But really, those are required by state of Vermont anyway to legally rent a home to someone. You know, we just want to make sure that the heating system's been serviced and checked within the last certain amount of time, and that there's CO detectors, carbon monoxide detectors, mm-hmm. smoke detectors in place, et cetera. Nothing onerous by any means, and something that should be done yearly by any landlord.
Right, and checked, I think, every 6 months or
yeah.
a year. I know my landlord was just through with those checks
yep.
a few weeks ago. So.
I'd like to say it's a no-brainer for a landlord to have their home, their apartment,
yeah.
weatherized if they have income-eligible clients in it.
And what if people have more questions about the weatherization assistance program, Jeff?
You're welcome to email me. If my email is jeff.wilcox, and it's G-E-O-F-F.
The very fancy way of
yeah.
spelling it.
Mm-hmm. W-I-L-C-O-X at Vermont, spelled out, .gov.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, there's also the link to the local agencies, the weatherization providers in their area on our website.
Excellent. All right. That's Jeff, G-E-O-F-F, .wilcox@vermont.gov. Jeff Wilcox is the director of the Vermont Weatherization Assistance Program. And to learn more, you can go to the website first before you email Jeff, weatherization.vermont.gov. Jeff, I want to thank you so much for being on the program this morning, talking about your program.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me. It's nice to be in this studio. I've listened to Celtics and Red Sox games in here for 40 years. It's
no
cool
kidding.
To see the inside.
Oh, that's great. That is our show for today. Vermont Viewpoint is directed by Danny McGivergan. Our email address is vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. Feel free to suggest topics or guests, and you can listen to past episodes of Vermont Viewpoint by downloading our podcast at WDEVradio.com. The Vermont Viewpoint podcast is sponsored by The Warren Store, funky, friendly, and almost world famous. Common Sense Radio is up next with Bill Sayre. Then just after CBS News, we've got the Governor's COVID-19 Response News Conference on WDEV. I'm Rick Sangari. I'll meet you back here tomorrow when we've got CV Fiber. We'll also talk to the Dutch Hill Alliance of Skiers and Hikers.